You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Doing the Work, the first show on the Back Home Network covering IU women's basketball. This is our 116th episode recorded on Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I'm your host, Jeff Marlowe, joined tonight by my co-host, Kathy Amos. And tonight we will be discussing the IU women's 2023-24 season. But as usual, we'll start this show with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. And our banner moment is brought to you by Homefield Apparel, the presenting sponsor of the Back Home Network. And Kathy, I thought this came out yesterday, kind of late in the evening here in Rensselaer and in probably the same thing in Iowa. Tara Vanderveer announced her retirement as the head coach at Stanford. The reason we will include this is an IU banner moment, doing the work banner moment. Tara Vanderveer, the winningest coach in NCAA history, is a proud IU alum. She had played for the Hoosiers all the way back in the early days of the program in the mid-70s. So our Hoosier Proud banner moment for Tara Vanderveer, retirement as the all-time winningest coach in NCAA basketball history. And again, Homefield is constantly releasing new schools or updating their products for schools in their existing line. You are bound to find something for you or anyone in your life that just loves great collegiate gear. Not only do you get quality apparel, but you're also supporting an Indiana-based business that has its roots in the Kelley School of Business. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME23, that's H-O-M-2-3, to get 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME23 for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. The news since the last podcast, and Kathy, I want to thank you and Andy for really picking up the slack there while I was gone on vacation over spring break. And I got to watch some of those when I had some free Wi-Fi and also when I got back. So kudos to you guys, and especially to Andy for stepping in. But news since we've last talked to you, Sydney Parrish was named to the Albany All-Regional team. By the way, if you haven't been paying attention, Indiana lost to South Carolina. South Carolina won the whole thing, and Indiana was the closest, yeah. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
That's right.
Sarah Scalia participated in and won the women's three-point contest at the Final Four weekend, and she barely lost to Tominaga from Nebraska in the men's versus women's shoot contest. So congratulations to Sarah Scalia on winning the three-point contest. Ariel Wisney sang the national anthem for the Friday session of the Final Four, did an outstanding job. Sarah and Mackenzie Holmes played in the All-Star game at the Final Four weekend. The final AP poll was released this week, and IU came in at 12th. Mackenzie Holmes announced today that she will be undergoing knee surgery in May to correct the knee issue that has bothered her since high school. She posted this on her Instagram and other social media things and on the IU website. And Kathy, I want to get your thoughts on this a little bit. I thought it was interesting that she talked about how long this had been an issue for her. And she kind of, played through it. And as I said earlier, IU alum and Stanford head coach Tara Vanderveer announced her retirement. Listen to this for our workaholics here. 1,216 wins, 271 losses. That's an 82% winning percentage in 45 years of coaching. She won three national titles, all with Stanford, and she spent her last 38 years at Stanford. She had actually been in the Big Ten for a little bit. She had 5 years coaching stint with Ohio State with the Buckeyes. And then former Michigan head coach Kevin Borseth, who also won over 500 games, announced his retirement today. He spent five seasons in Ann Arbor earlier in the 2010s, but the bulk of his career and success was at Wisconsin Green Bay. He had been at Green Bay, went to Michigan, left Michigan to go back to Green Bay, and then announced his retirement today. So, Kathy, we're going to throw it over to you for the Amos angle and get some of your thoughts. But I'm really, like I said, really interested in what you thought about Sarah's winning the three-point contest, Max News a little bit, and maybe your thoughts on Tara Vanderveer, whatever else you want to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'll just touch a little bit on most of these. So, you know, like you mentioned, and we'll get into the South Carolina game as we do a schedule breakdown, but, you know, it was great to see Sydney Parrish getting named to that Albany All-Regional. And by the way, let me back up, Jeff. Welcome back from your trip in Spain. And if Andy, you're listening out there, I appreciate you filling in. I was able to really great that our schedules worked out for us to be able to watch the games live and that be able to do the podcast together. So welcome back. But yeah, Sydney Parrish just really played fantastic in that South Carolina game. So I'm glad that she made that all regional team. And it was a lot of fun watching Sarah participate in that 3-point contest. I wish it wouldn't have gone so late. And we could definitely talk about how, you know, ESPN ran the 3-point contest along with a side of the men and the dunk contest, but I don't think it's really that probably important for tonight's podcast. Maybe that's when we're really slow this summer. We go back and talk about how maybe they could improve that. If you have not been out on X or Twitter, if you're a member out there and seen some of the footage of Ariel Wisney singing the national anthem on that Friday session, I would highly recommend that. If that woman isn't thinking about music, we all should write her and like encourage her to get into music as her career, because it was really fantastic. I didn't get to watch a whole lot of the All-Star game that Sarah and McKenzie right. participated in. But the little bit I did get to watch, it was kind of a typical All-Star game, right? You know, McKenzie was having a hard time getting the ball, and it was pretty much as soon as somebody got it, they did whatever they could to jack up a shot. So wasn't much to watch. In fact, we ended up turning it off because we were out and about and watching on our phone anyway. The McKenzie Holmes news that came out around her scheduling that surgery was interesting. And so for those of you who haven't heard, she announced that she's definitely needing knee surgery. She's actually needed this since her freshman year in high school, her ninth grade year. So this is something she's been playing with. It's I believe a kneecap issue. Something she's been playing with for a very, very long time. So it was, you know, thanks to McKenzie for fighting through that for her 5 years with us. We've always known that she's had issues with that knee off and on, but to know that she's needed surgery for this long, I think was kind of an eye opener. Huge congratulations to Tara Bandevere. I mean, 45 years as a head coach and finishing with an 82% win record is just, that's amazing to me. And, you know, it was even talked about at work. And for, again, those of you who may not know, I live in Iowa. So it's really fun to hear, you know, people talk about women's basketball in my work setting and not just about Iowa basketball. So, you know, that's what I kind of took away from that. I walked by an aisle and I'm like, oh, are you guys talking about Tara Vanderbilt? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, by the way, she's an IU alum. And then I just kept walking. It was great. So really, it was kind of fun to have that. So really huge congratulations. So boy, and you know what, the 2 weeks or so since Andy and I did that last post game, we've had a lot of news come out and a lot of really positive. And you know, we'll get into the season breakdown and things today, but it was just really kind of nice to see some of these accolades coming out. It was great to see the Final Four too, and the huge viewership numbers that whole thing, you know, garnered from the entire Final Four, you know, not just the games that Caitlin Clark played in, but all of them, and just the viewership there, and, you know, the sold out crowds and the ticket prices. And, you know, I think they're going to have to start looking the NCAA to start making some changes, you know. And I think we, you know, this isn't exactly, Indiana per se, but in general, I think we're hearing rumors that they might be looking at getting rid of the hosting for the first top four and going to more neutral sites. I wouldn't be surprised, Jeff, if, you know, before long, they're going to have to start looking at bigger venues for the Final Four. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's they were talking about maybe waiting until after the 25 tournament to really make before they started to make some changes. But there was an article on ESPN there after kind of during that Final Four week, Kathy, that they may very well look at making some changes by next year's tournament. And I think one of the things is going to be that is really going to be pushed is the neutral sites is to get away from the hosting, you know, hosting sites and see how that goes. Possibly. I would like to get back to the where you have four different regionals. I will admit that I'm not the yes. biggest fan of the women going to the two site regionals, and then you have two regionals at each site. The men aren't doing that. I don't understand why right. they think that makes sense for the women. The one I also saw this, I can't remember if I saw this on Twitter or in another article, but how about this one, Kathy? Somebody that kind of, and I don't think this one's going to happen, but it was kind of a thrown out there as, you know, what they really need to get to is where the men's Final Four and the women's Final Four are in the same city.
Oh, you know, that would be really great if they haven't, as long as they put it in a big enough city that has enough hotel space.
And that, I think that's an issue. Even in Annapolis, I'm not sure in Annapolis, who does a great job of hosting. There'd be very few cities I think that could handle that. And Annapolis is a right. really good convention and Final Four city, but I'm not sure they could.
No. I don't think Des Moines is not a huge city, but you know, we have a fairly good size arena here too. Not big enough to host the Final Four, but you know, we're bigger than some people might think, but there's not going to be a whole lot of places that would be able to have that. They're going to have a lot going for them, right? They're going to have the actual arena, right? Which at this right. point is going to be a football arena, and the logistics outside of that with restaurants and hotels and accommodations for not just fans and players and media. Cause now you're talking about, you know, 8 teams and all the media that comes along with it and the coaching staffs and the fans that come along with it. That would be interesting. It would be a really neat concept, but I think that might be a little logistically hard to pull off and would really limit your location spaces.
Yeah. And I will say this, Kathy, I don't know if you saw this art, you saw this story during the time. I saw this when I was over in Spain on the trip. I think a couple things driving this first and second round stuff that, you know, there are some coaches starting to complain that it typically comes from the teams that are losing to the host schools, but there's starting to be some complaints about coaches and, you know, from coaches about home court advantage in the tournament. And then also there was a kind of an ugly incident out at Gonzaga. Gonzaga was hosting within that pod. And I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was Utah because Spokane was also hosting first and second round men's games that had been scheduled already. And then Gonzaga got to host for the women's side. They had very limited hotel space. I think Utah ended up over in Idaho at a hotel, and there was some ugly, some story there about, you know, possibly some racism and things being, some comments being made to the Utah team. So I think there are a couple things that are driving some of that, but I do agree with some of the comments here in the Workaholics that the kind of the flip side of that argument is, will they sell enough tickets? Can you sell enough tickets? Because the one thing you get with the host sites is, you know, you're going to get generally good crowds. Can you get those crowds if you're playing, for example, in Indianapolis with IU or Notre Dame? Will they still, Indiana's still a top 4 seed, kind of like what they do with the men, they're going to put you to the nearest place. But, you know, it just would be interesting to see. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sorry. We have our windows open, so I think I'm getting a little traffic noise coming in. So, I think it would be interesting. My question is, you know, as much as the viewership and the fan watching has increased, do we think there's enough ticket sales to go to neutral sites? I got myself all choked up about it, I guess.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. There you go. So that would be my question. Are we ready for that? Right. I mean, you know, we are seeing really close to sellouts at home sites, but then are the fans going to travel as well? And, you know, we know there's definitely some fans that do. Iowa, South Carolina, you know, Tennessee does fairly well. LSU traveled pretty well. UConn travels really well. But if you get out of, you know, those top 5-6 historical powerhouses, do you think that there's going to be enough fans to travel, especially for those first, you know, first and second round games? That would be my big question. And I'm sure that's their question too, to see, you know, if they were quite ready for that. And maybe it's not quite, is it always the top 4? Maybe you only have the top 2 and you see how the rest go. I don't really know what the formula is for that. But at some point, I think they're going to probably move away from it. I'm just not sure if next year is the year for it.
Right. So anything else you want to hit on?
No, I don't think so.
I will talk about this. You were talking about the video, and I don't know if you saw this, but you're talking about the Ariel Wisney video on Twitter and some other places to see. And this is kind of non-IU related, but I was going to bring this up here a little bit later in the episode as we finished out. If you're a baseball fan, There was a really good scene yesterday at Boston at Fenway Park. Tim Wakefield, the former Red Sox pitcher, died last fall from cancer. His wife passed away just a few months ago. Their daughter threw out the first pitch. It was a really awesome thing to see. So if you are a big baseball fan like I am, it was a really neat video to see. So there's just some great things from that person, you know, from that kid, Breonna Wakefield, to what you're talking about, Ariel Wisney. And there's just some really neat things that they're being done out there and that you can find on social media. There's a lot of bad too, but there's some really neat things you can find on social media.
Yeah, that is good. And boy, that was just such a great, great performance too. We knew, you know, I wonder how that happened back to Ariel. Like, I wonder if somehow that got sent in, like somebody got that from senior night when she sang the national anthem, right? For senior night and maybe sent that in to NCAA, or how they found out about it. Because I thought that was a really cool touch that they did with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really cool.
Hey, one other thing I didn't mention in the news here, and I'll give his credit to John and the Workaholics for bringing this back up. Tennessee, as soon as the tournament was pretty much over, they fired Kelly Harper as their head coach. And according to reports, made a run, or at least maybe inquired about the availability of Terry Morin. According to the reports that we saw, Terry Morin was not interested. I think, you know, obviously there was some fear for a couple of days that, you know, Tennessee being that blue blood, like you talked about, Kathy, might throw a bunch of money at her. They eventually ended up hiring the young female coach from Marshall to take over at Tennessee. But your thoughts on, you know, Tennessee making a run at Coach Morin?
Yeah, you know, I thought the whole Tennessee hiring was interesting. Because they also, you know, rumors were that they were going after the Duke coach too, right?
Kara Lawson.
Tara Lawson. Thank you. I believe she's even an alum, isn't she, for Tennessee? So if that was true, that they got turned down by her, got turned down by Tara Morin, and who else knows? But I think, you know, Tara Lawson was, at least according to the Vegas odds that we were sent, was like the by far the favorite to get that position at Tennessee. And the fact that they ended up having to go with a pretty inexperienced coach makes me wonder if they're going to end up regretting, you know, firing their coach, who I thought, you know, she was really turning around their season. You know, they came really close to beating South Carolina. They were making a great run and looked really good towards the end of the season. So, you know, it might not be what they are expecting in terms of Tennessee standards, but as we all well know, replacing a very, a legend, you know, like Pat Summitt, is going to be very difficult, and you're not going to get those kind of results, especially with the parity that we have in women's basketball anymore. I think to see a kind of run like, you know, Pat Summitt had, I think is just going to be something we don't see as much of, and it's going to be hard to duplicate. So I wonder if, you know, Tennessee might be setting themselves up for a little bit of heartache here, if you will, for this foreseeable future.
They very well may, Kathy. That's a great point about following the legend and trying to find that next person to kind of be the legend. But I think it also talks a little bit about, Kathy, to what Terry Morin, A, has built at IU, and B, she's a Southern Indiana girl. I mean, this is a young... I shouldn't call her a girl. She's a woman. But this is, you know, she grew up, she played at Seymour, Southern Indiana, went to that school up north, but she's basically spent most of her life and most of her career in Indiana, whether it was at school. She was an assistant at Butler, where I first met her years and years ago. I'm sure she doesn't remember me, but where I first ran across her. Then she was a head coach at University of Indianapolis. She was head coach at Indiana State. So I think it just tells you that the program at Indiana is on the rise, and a different coach than Terry Morin might have been intrigued by an offer to go from IU to Tennessee. But, you know, for Terry Morin, family's close by, as Joel's pointed out in the Workaholics. Her dad's close by. Her family's close by. She's an Indiana kid, you know, Indiana person at heart. Grew up an Indiana fan. So I think especially for her, it's been that challenge to build the program into what she has. And why do I want to go somewhere else when I've begun to build and solidify a pretty solid program at Indiana that's now looked upon one of the best programs in the country?
That's right. Yep. Absolutely agree. And, you know, couple that with her family being so close, especially her dad, I think just puts it in a very good position for her, and lucky for us. So happy that, you know, rumor came up and was squashed pretty quickly if it was true. So that's great. Whether it was, might've been true, but whatever, if there was a rumor or she just turned it down, I'm just glad that she's not leaving.
So you want to move on and talk about the season?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so we're going to break this down a little bit for you guys. Overall, the Hoosiers finished 26-6, 15-3 in the conference. They were 17-0, a perfect 17-0 at home. I think this, them and South Carolina were the only two teams that were undefeated at home this year. So, again, a great mark for the women. Let's kind of break down the non-conference portion of the season real quick, Kathy, or to start with. And I'll kind of let you go from there, and then I'll kind of jump in and after you. But let's talk a little bit about the non-conference. They went 9-1 in the non-conference portion of the season.
Yep. Yeah. So I think, you know, the headline coming into the season was that that matchup with Stanford. You know, we went out there to Stanford and played, and boy, I think it was a big wake up call for the team. You know, they came out and just really got, you know, from the beginning, you could tell that Stanford was ready to go. Our women were on their heels, and it just started off poorly and never finished any better. And that was the loss we ended up taking. That was the one loss we had in the non-conference, 96-64. You know, there are quite a few, they took care of business at quite a few other places, at home, and, they went on the road to Maine, which was an interesting one too. If we remember, I think they were down pretty late in that game, but ended up coming back and winning it. But the other headlines that we were talking about going into the non-conference were going down to Fort Myers, which luckily my husband and I were lucky enough to be able to go to over Thanksgiving, and they came out with really great solid wins down there over Tennessee, 71-57, and then over Princeton, 72-63. So those were probably the two headlining wins for me. I think and I'll toss this back over to you with this question. The most surprising game for me that I remember of the non-conference was actually the Maine game, Jeff. I don't know if you, I mean, the Stanford would be right up there with the margin of loss. I expected that to be a loss. I thought it'd be closer, but I was really surprised by the Maine game. So I don't know what your thoughts were on that or what your biggest surprise was during the non-conference.
I think the biggest surprise in the non-conference was there were the games they struggled in, and one of them was Maine. That was one, again, we didn't really put it in the run sheet, Kathy, but good. I was going to bring it up if you didn't. That was a game that we really, as a team, didn't really get control of until the fourth quarter. It was kind of, you know, if I remember right, Maine was up at the half, or it was really tight at the half and deep into the third quarter. So, and again, that was a game they set up for Mac, you know, and Coach Morin has done that. She likes to try and get back to an area for a player, so maybe friends and family can see them play. And that was the reason they went out there, because most teams probably aren't going to go play Maine on the road when you're in the Big Ten. But Coach Morin was willing to do that for Mac, especially going back out to home. But the other one I would come back to is the Murray State game. On paper, it looks like a big win. But that was a game that I went to. I actually attended the press conference, and Terry Morin was not happy that game. She was not happy with their defensive effort. She was not happy with their focus. She was happy they got the win, and they looked better toward the end of the game. But there was a period there, even in the second half, where I think it was the second half, where they scored and they were up 8-9 points, but they scored on a basket, a layup maybe even, and she immediately called a timeout, because the previous possession defensively, they hadn't been back, or they didn't get back on D. Murray State had gotten off on a run out in the possession before the prior possession, and she took a timeout and basically got all over them. And I remember asking her in the press conference, and she was like, you know, that's, not getting back on D is that's a non-negotiable. We're not going to, you know, that's not something we're going to be able to accept. And that was one of those that was kind of coming off that Stanford game. And I think the Stanford game was surprising, not the fact they lost, Kathy, kind of like you mentioned, was how they lost. They just, A, right, were never in the game, and B, it kind of became the template for some of their losses. They got behind early, didn't shoot well for most of the game. And the other team made big runs. And I think we'll talk about this a little bit on a couple other games as we go through. But then they also had some games against lower level teams, but they looked very good against Stetson. They looked very good against Evansville. They looked very good. I'm trying to remember, there was one other non-conference game in Assembly Hall, and Lipscomb. So again, not high quality competition, high caliber competition, not Power Five, but they looked good in those games. So it was kind of the non-conference season. I remember you and I having a discussion a little bit, just where is this team? Which team is this? The team that's blowing out these, you know, lower level Division I teams, or is it the team that went out to the farm and got beat by 30 and may have been felt lucky to win and may have felt lucky to only get beat by 30?
Yeah, that's right. And that's where we definitely, I think, knew right away that we had talked during the offseason about the loss of Grace Berger, and we knew that was going to be a big hole to fill, but we thought it would be, you know, at least I thought it was going to be a hill that they could overcome just because they did have quite a bit of that nucleus back, right? They still had, you know, four of their five starters coming back. And so it looked, and then you thought, you know, Sarah was going to come up and slot into that starting lineup pretty well as well. So you had your five people, you know, that really played quite a few minutes last year. And I think that Stanford game really made me open my eyes to understand that, yes, Grace was a loss, but it was a much bigger loss than I was expecting it to be. And the lack of her leadership really came through, I think, in that game, where they just definitely came out and weren't ready for that game at all. So to me, that's what kind of opened my eyes. Again, we knew it was going to be a loss, having Grace not coming back. I just didn't, at least personally, I didn't think it was going to be that big of a mountain to be overcoming. And we saw that, I think, quite a few times throughout the season as a theme, where it just kind of seemed they didn't have quite the cohesiveness and the leadership on the floor that we saw last year, and we're really missing Grace.
Yeah, I think that was and now the question going into this offseason and next year is what is the replacement? You know, what do they look like without Mackenzie Holmes and from Sarah. That standpoint and yeah. Sarah, but yeah. You know, but especially Mackenzie, who's been your, you know, your anchor in the middle for the last 4 or 5 years, you know. And so I think we'll be I got a feeling we're gonna be asking some of these same questions next season, Kathy. We're like, wow, didn't think we'd miss Mackenzie quite this much. And I think there's some great points here that, you know, we'll talk about in some other episodes, but when we talk about some of the kids who are coming back, but some kids now who are going, you know, players who are going to have some opportunities because people in front of them have graduated and moved on.
Right.
You know, Lily Meister, especially a Lene Beaumont, a Jules Lamondola, who should see a little more run on the floor at, you know, at times. So with that, anything else about the non-conference you want to talk about? I want to go back, Cash, because you were there. I thought you made a great point. The Tennessee win, 14-point win, felt like a Princeton was a solid win, and turned out to really be, because Princeton ended up ranked at the end of the year. They made the tournament, won the Ivy League. But that Tennessee game, you talk about with their firing kit. We talked earlier about Kelly Harper and the Tennessee job being open. We caught a little bit of a break, because I don't think, if you remember right, I wanted to ask you about this. I don't think Rekaya Jackson played in that game
in
Fort Myers. So we caught a little bit of a break. But still, I thought coming off that Stanford game, going up against that level of competition, I think both of us have kind of had that fear of, we probably can go 1-1. 2-0 would be awesome, but there's also a little bit in the back of our minds was like, it could go 0-2.
Yeah, that's right. So it was great to be able to go down. And that Tennessee game in particular, I remember they came out and they were no nonsense from the beginning. And I think that was the one where Sarah in particular – no, that was the one that Yarden just put up a monster score. And then Sarah did the same in the Princeton game. So Princeton, they kind of, you know, took a step off of the gas pedal, if you will, in that second half. That's why the score ended up a little closer. But, you know, Princeton, credit to them, they changed at halftime their philosophy. They weren't shooting as many threes. They were doing more drives and straight line drives. And we know we have kind of some trouble with that, stopping the guards. So yeah, so for sure, let's move on to the conference then.
Well, real quick about Princeton, though. Yeah. Princeton also did something that kind of came back to be a little bit of an Achilles heel. Princeton pressed them. Princeton really picked up the pressure, put some, farther out onto the floor across half court, and they struggled a little bit with that. And we kind of thought, okay, a one-off. Well, we're going to have some games. We talk about that as well. Let's talk about the conference. Again, I'm going to kind of throw it over to you and let you get started.
Yeah, I'll cover the wins, and then you can maybe give a breakdown, real quick overview of the losses, and we can kind of get into it. So from a wins perspective, which is the fun part, so thanks for letting me take it. we had swept Purdue again. That was our 11th win in a row over Purdue. And if you go back, actually, it was 14 of the last 15 we have now won. So, you know, quite the pendulum swing in that rivalry, because, you know, there was quite a while there that Purdue was definitely the dominant force between the two teams. So, but boy, we really had their number here, winning 14 of the last 15. Another sweep was over Maryland, which was really exciting and another noteworthy, because this was the first time we ever went up to College Park and won. I think probably the most fun win, maybe at least, and I didn't even get to watch it except on my tiny, tiny phone. But my favorite most fun win was when we beat Iowa at home. We beat them 86-69. And you know, it probably ended up costing Iowa a piece of that Big Ten conference title. And then the other notable win was at home against Michigan State, which turned out to be really close and maybe the wildest game of the year, winning 94-91. So just that was just a crazy game to watch too. So those are some of the highlights from our wins.
Yeah, that Michigan State game, both teams were bombing threes. And yes, neither team really could, you know, Michigan State, I think, was up 10 at the half, and Indiana ends up with a three-point win. But yeah, that to me was the wildest game of the year just because of the score. Excuse me.
And not
the
even overtime.
And the pace. I mean, they, yeah, I think it was 32-27 at the end of the first quarter. I mean, it was such an up and down pace and shooting wise. The losses, well, at Iowa, at Ohio State, at Illinois. And when we talked about in the preseason, Kathy, we both kind of, you know, thought maybe 15-3, 14-4. And they ended up, as we said, 15-3. But the loss at Iowa, 84-57, again, kind of along that same line as what we saw at Stanford. Didn't shoot well, didn't look very focused. We, you know, Iowa especially, you know, kind of did whatever they wanted. They got, Iowa got good performances from Gabby Marshall, Kate Martin, Molly Davis. They got good performances from their other players, but Clark, basically Caitlin was able to go kind of wherever she wanted. And that is still kind of been the one thing that we see in the losses. We really struggle on containing the drive. Ohio State though, kind of flipped that a little bit. Indiana had the lead at the half, and then Ohio State made a huge run in the third quarter to take about an 8-point lead and then held on to win 74-69. So Indiana, for the really first big game on the road that they looked respectable and didn't really, but again, third quarter a little bit, they struggled with the press, especially about the last 6-7 minutes of the third quarter. They struggled with Ohio State's press, which again, kind of became a recurring theme. Then the kind of the one that really, you know, with the way the season had gone, you didn't feel like that game at Champaign was going to be as tough because Illinois had struggled. But we thought going all the way back, you and I think both, when I went back and I actually watched the preview show again, and if I remember correctly, I should have wrote these down, but I'm pretty sure that you and I both thought Illinois was a game we could lose on the road. But that's when we thought Illinois was going to be possibly a top four team in the league, not, you know, middle of the pack or down below middle of the pack. But then they go over to Illinois and just really don't show up really. Don't really bring any kind of A or B effort. And Illinois just drove by them, you know, just really went at them, attacked them, and gets out of we lose at Illinois 86-66, which essentially took any chance we had away for sharing, because any chance we had to be able to run the table and hope that, you know, Iowa was going to beat Ohio State back in Iowa City to kind of create a three-way tie. So that was those three losses on the road in the conference you could live with. It was just the fact that you ended up being in the conference race. It, you know, Ohio State, and again, I'm not trying to make it sound like we were, you know, we're super smart, but we both said Ohio State on paper was the best team in the league, and they proved it throughout the year by winning the league. But you always want to try and at least give yourself some type of chance. And that last weekend, you know, for the Big Ten season, you really didn't have any chance to gain a share. You just had to, you know, you were playing for seeding, you were playing for tournament hosting type stuff. I will say this. I'll take it from, you know, on this one. Sidney Parrish, during that stretch, Sidney Parrish missed 7 games with a foot injury. We never really did get an official release of what the diagnosis was. We all kind of speculated stress fracture, broken foot.
She actually had an interview. She had an interview after the season and said it was a stress factor.
Okay, I didn't see that one. So there we go. So it was a stress fracture. But they went 6-1. Without Sidney. And the only one they lost was at Ohio State. So they actually played pretty well. And Lexi Bargesser, again, we're not trying to talk about a ton of individuals here, but Lexi Bargesser really showed that she could play a role for the future in that time that Sidney was out in those 7 games, because she got the start with that. Then, so now Indiana's the 3 seed going to the Big Ten tournament. And Kathy, I'm going to let you start talking about the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, just to touch a little bit on some of those wins, that, you know, kind of, or losses rather. Just real quick, Jeff, my big surprise, I think, and maybe I have two, I can't decide quite which, probably the Illinois loss at Illinois. Again, I know we talked about, and that was one we thought they could lose. It similar to Stanford, it wasn't as much as they lost it. It was the way they lost it, right? Losing by 20 points. And they just, again, from tip to the end, they didn't seem to, from tip off until the final buzzer, they just didn't seem to be in that game. Iowa also a little bit of a surprise, just because it actually became a theme for us with the third quarter. You mentioned in the Ohio State, but we just came out of halftime. You know, we were fairly close in that game, if I remember, like 7 or 8 points. You know, which felt like, you know, actually we played pretty well that first half. And then we came out that second half and we just got blitzed again in that third quarter. The same with Ohio State with the turnovers and their pressing. But, you know, that was kind of the theme either, you know, in our few losses that we had. Again, we only had six, but in the regular season, you know, we only had four losses. So, you know, to finish the conference at 15-3 again is just really fantastic. It just was, again, the way they lost some of these games, they weren't even in most of those losses. So that was the big surprise for me. But yeah, so then that drove us into the Big Ten tournament where we just came out and, you know, that was, again, then senior night. You know, we have to remember that Sydney kind of re-aggravated that foot. McKenzie's knee got flared up. So we were going into that game. Lexi had been reported in a boot for quite a good chunk of the year. And Lily got hurt in senior night, too. So, you know, we had three players in particular. We had a pretty good feeling Lexi was going to be fine playing. But the other three, we were all pretty questionable going into that Michigan game and that Friday night game. And, you know, they ended up playing every one of the three except for McKenzie. Lily got the start. Lexi ended up getting the start, but Lily came in off the bench. And, you know, they held McKenzie out for quite a while. And I think that was the surprising part of it is, you know, we came out and we were quite a bit ahead. But again, that third quarter kind of bug reared its head and came back and bit us there in that game. And Michigan just went on the run. And that's where I think you and I in the post game were like, well, if we're going to put McKenzie in, I felt like we should have put her in, you know, earlier in that third quarter when Michigan was making that run. By the time we did, you know, it really was too late. And by then, you know, we were up 14 at the half and then we had that 27 point swing, a lot of it in the third quarter. It was almost too late by the time they put McKenzie in. And that was really close, I think, Jeff, to keeping us from hosting. And we talked about that a lot, you know, going in and we were sweating it. Luckily, we had a lot of other teams on that kind of four bubble line, if you will, hosting line, you know, have some losses that really helped us solidify that hosting. But that was a bit of a surprise again, too, not as much as, you know, how we came out in the first half and then just flipped it around in the second half. Michigan made some great adjustments. And I just thought, you know, how we handled it from a coaching perspective was the big surprise for me in that game.
Yeah, I would have liked to see them play Mac earlier in the game, get her a few minutes here and there. We found out after the game that the plan was basically to try and hold her out the whole game. And then if they had to, they would have played her. Then they would have played her on Saturday, you know, when they got there. But it's kind of the old adage in sports, you know, you got to win the first one. You know, you can't worry about Saturday. And I think that was one of those where that may have been what they said publicly too. There's a part of me in my head as a coach, it's like, that's what I'll say publicly, but there was, you know, really probably no chance. I think they really didn't want to play Mac at all, but I got a feeling Mac was sitting there going, I can go. We can't let this, you know, put me in. I want to play. I want to get in. And sometimes you're going to listen to your senior a little bit, even though sometimes, you know, because the trainer is probably, you know, the doctor, the trainer sometimes will come to you as a coach and be like, she can go. Be better if she didn't, but she's, you know, right. There are no, you know, there's no limitations, no restriction as far as what she can do. And so you're kind of like, yeah, okay, I'll try and hold her out. Oh man, we're down by 10 and the game seems like it's slipping away. So let's get her back in. But even then, Kathy, like you said, you know, I would have, like, if you were going to play her in the first, get her in early when that run was being made, see if you could have settled it down. And I think that's one of those, Kathy, where in that game, the Stanford game, the Iowa game on the road, the Illinois game, and for the most part, we didn't see a lot of this, but when it happened, like in those games, like you're talking about that 27 point swing and a half,
right?
That's huge. Yeah. That was those handful of games right there where we really were talking about, where's the leader? Who's that person on the floor? And that came back to kind of that, you know, and you hate to keep talking about a player who wasn't part of this team, but that they were so used to a a Grace Berger being able to direct traffic, make, you know, get the ball where it's going to go. And I thought there were times during the season, Chloe Moore McNeil did a good job of that. I think Yarden showed a little bit of that in the NCAA tournament with the bits and pieces I got to watch. But it, there were just enough times on the road, especially, or in that neutral site at the Big Ten tournament, where they kind of got that deer in the headlight look when some teams made a run on them and they didn't know how to react.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So that was a great example of that, Jeff. So,
yeah. So we get bounced out after get the double bye. I'm also not a big fan of the double bye. Sometimes I think that comes back to haunt you.
Sometimes it's worse.
But anyway, so we wait around. We did the for those of you who were watching with us, we did the Selection Sunday show. Had a lot of fun with that. But Indiana ended up as the number 4 seed in the region. Unfortunately, with South Carolina, they hosted. And Kathy, why don't you talk a little bit about the NCAA tournament? Because you got to see more of it than I did. And I'll just kind of chime in with some things I saw after the fact.
Yeah, absolutely. So our first game was up against number 13 seed Fairfield. So that was an interesting matchup, right? Because Fairfield came in with only one loss, but their strength of schedule was really not very good. And so that's probably why they had the 13 seed instead of something a little higher, you know, what you might expect from a team that only had one loss. And so, you know, if you listen to a lot of the pre-tournament shows and people that quote unquote know, that was, you know, the sexy 13 seed upset pick. A lot of people were just saying, well, you know, Fairfield's only lost one game. They're really good. They're fast. They play a high tempo game. And, you know, in that first half, it kind of looked like that might be the case, but this was an example of where we came out in that third quarter and really just turned the fire up and, you know, just ended up winning that game going away pretty handily and ended up winning 89-56. And the best part, I think, was not only did we build this ginormous lead in the third quarter, we're able then to rest a lot of our starters in that by that fourth quarter as well to go into that second game, which was definitely a 4-5 seed matchup with number 5 seed Oklahoma coming in. And, you know, that was probably one of the most exciting games, I think, of the tournament, at least the second round of the games that I watched. And it was great, again, where you just saw, in this case, I think McKenzie and Sarah in particular, I felt like they just were going to will that team to win. And, you know, I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but I think in the Fairfield game, I can't remember which way it went, but either McKenzie first broke like the NCAA tournament most points scored by an IU Hoosier. And then in the Oklahoma game, actually the way Sarah said it in the Fairfield game, and the McKenzie came back and said it in the Oklahoma game. So I think McKenzie, if I remember, I can pull up the box score. Maybe I think she had like 29 points that Oklahoma game, which set a NCAA record for Indiana for most points in a game. And then obviously that got us into the Sweet 16, which was great. It was our third Sweet 16 in 4 years. You know, after a program going without any Sweet 16 wins for quite a long time, I think we had one prior to that. And then all of a sudden now we've had 3 in 4 years. That was quite an accomplishment. And it was great to see our players running up into the student section again and all of the accolades that came out of that as well. So that was a lot of fun. And then, of course, that matches up, as you mentioned, with the number 1 overall seed, South Carolina. I think everyone knows the story of South Carolina that's listening to at this point, you know, undefeated. They end up going on to eventually win the entire tournament. We ended up losing 79-75. And, you know, that score isn't indicative of what the game was like, because South Carolina definitely came out in that first half and had their way with us and got whatever they wanted and could do whatever they wanted, which is, you know, the normal South Carolina way. The third quarter didn't look like it was going to be a whole lot better. You know, we kept, you know, they extended that lead and finally we were down by 21. And, you know, it just was like all of a sudden there was some kind of switch and our players came out in this case led by Sydney Parrish. And she just came out and really led quite an amazing comeback. And that 79-75 win that South Carolina had over us was the only single digit win that South Carolina had in the entire tournament. And that included their final four games. So we were definitely the team that held them the best. And, you know, I said this to a couple of people afterwards, if we play anyone else besides South Carolina bracket, I think we're in the final four. The way that team really was playing, the way they had come together for that NCAA tournament, I think if we get in any other bracket, at a minimum, we're in the Elite Eight, but I still warrant that we probably would have made the final four. that's maybe, you know, I'm a bit of a homer, so I could be wrong, but the way we looked, I thought that we could play with anyone in the country.
Yeah, and if I remember right, Kathy, didn't they get it all the way back to two, but just couldn't get another stop?
That's right.
Just need one more stop.
One more minute. We needed one more minute.
One more minute.
Yes.
Yeah. And one of the things I did was after the game, I was able to read a little bit of some of the review, and Dawn Staley had a lot of positive things to say about Terry Moore the team that they had just played. And really felt that, Indiana, I think the comment she made was the effect of, they're going to be back because, Terry's building something really good, and that's a good team over there. And so I think they knew, Dawn Staley knew that they had gotten everything they wanted. And of course they got to move on, but they'd gotten everything they wanted. And from the Hoosiers, and from that standpoint, I want to go back real quick to the Oklahoma game, Kathy, though, but that was a game that even late in the fourth quarter, Oklahoma was still up five, or in the middle of the fourth quarter, Oklahoma was still up 5 or 6 points, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was definitely really close. And, that game was on paper is not as, it was closer than it looks on paper, I should say. And I think quite a bit of it was because of, they were trying to foul they did foul. Right. The unfortunate thing is they kept having to foul Sarah Scalia, who ended up going 7 of 8 from the line, and almost all of those free throws were in the last couple of minutes. So we really kind of lengthened that 29 to 20 in that fourth quarter. A bunch of them were free throws. And yes, I'm double checking myself here with the points. That is the game McKenzie had 29 points and set the all time NCAA single game record for Indiana. So,
and Yarden had a huge shot, I believe, to give him the lead.
Yes. Pretty quiet all game. And then, as she has been known to do, she came up pretty big and clutch, and, towards the end, fourth quarter guard zone showed up for us for sure.
Yeah. So that wrapped up the season for the Hoosiers. As we said earlier, they finished 26-6, another outstanding year for Terry Moore's program. 15-3 in the conference. They went 17-0 at home, advanced as Kathy said, to the Sweet 16 for the third time in the last 4 years. And like, I totally agree with Kathy's comment. If it'd been anybody else but South Carolina as the one seed, I think Indiana would have been a very dangerous team to advance to the Final Four. And we saw that, Stanford lost they did not reach the Final Four. They were a one seed from that standpoint, or excuse me, they were the two seed. Take that back. Two seed, one seed. Stanford did not. What's that?
Stanford was a two seed. Yeah,
that's right. Texas got that one seed, but Texas, was a one seed, didn't get to the final four. Trying to think who the other one seed was. Yep.
USC.
USC didn't get to the Final Four. So Indiana, with anybody else besides USC, or excuse me, besides South Carolina, I think I agree with you, Kathy. I think we would have been a very dangerous team to advance to the Final Four. But as we've said so often in the NCAA tournament, it's about matchups. It really does. Once you get to the Sweet 16, it's so much about matchups. Real quick, Kathy, I want to get your thoughts about the Final Four. We were texting back and forth a little bit. I know we want to try and wrap up the show here a little bit. But I thought, UConn getting the Final Four, I thought would maybe, if not Geno's best coaching job of his career, it was one of them, because that team was so limited on the bench. I mean, they had probably four All-Americans possibly sitting on the bench.
That's right.
But I thought that, they really played pretty – the games I got to see, because I got back to watch them on Sunday. I got a chance to see them play their Elite Eight game and then the Final Four game. And I thought that was a great run. Iowa, give them credit. They made the league look good, made the run to the championship game again from that standpoint. And then a team that we're kind of familiar with a little bit, North Carolina State, advanced to the Final Four. So just kind of your real quick thoughts on the Final Four.
Yeah, I think to your point with UConn, for those of you who don't know, I think they had a total of 8 players that were actually healthy and available to play. And I think 3 of them, I know Paige Beckers for sure, averaged 39.5 minutes throughout the entire tournament, and multiple games where they had people play the entire 40 minutes. So to be able to make a run that deep and then played Iowa really tough in that first Final Four game, hats off to Geno and that entire team for coming together and not letting, the excuses of all the injuries say that was going to dictate how their season went. They said, nope, that we're going to dictate how our season went. They were essentially starting 5 guards. So, and just the lack of depth of or at least because of availability, not because of a talent, it was to me one of the most amazing feats. But you got a hat tip to South Carolina and then some for going undefeated. You know, even though, you know, South Carolina in the last 3 years, I think have only lost something like 4 or 5 games, maybe 6 at max. Yeah, they have put together quite a program there as well. And they are on the opposite end of UConn, where they went 10 deep easy. And I don't think anyone on their team averaged over 30 minutes. I think the most that anyone played on average was around 28 minutes. And I can't remember which player that was. Iowa. Yeah. Thanks, Iowa, for showing up for the Big Ten. They're going to, you know, just like us, they're going to be even more different than yep. we're expecting. So we'll get into that. Obviously not tonight. We don't have time for it, but, you know, we'll start breaking down some of the teams once we know how the transfer portal goes and who's coming, who's going. We'll start breaking that down later in the non-season. But thanks to that, thanks to Caitlin Clark, you know, as much as we've, you know, not always been her biggest fan in terms of some of her antics, thanks to Caitlin Clark for being such a good representative. I think that, you know, if you listen to some of her press conferences this year, I think she's kind of toned down a little bit of what we had heard from her in the previous years. I think she probably got some coaching on that. And, you know, she's going to be a great representative now for women's basketball going into the WNBA. For those of you who haven't seen, I think now the Fever went from no games that were shown this year on national TV to I think 36 of their 40 games yeah. or something like that are going to all be now on television nationally. So thanks to Caitlin for, you know, really bringing a good spotlight and being a good ambassador to our sport. And NC State was a huge surprise for me, to your point. NC State was just not someone I expected this year, at least, to make it to that Final Four. So it was a really interesting mix. At the end of the day, you know, it kind of came down to the final game that I was expecting all along between South Carolina and Iowa. I just think Iowa didn't have the firepower to keep up with South Carolina, but obviously no one did, right? We mentioned, we were the closest that came, but no one was able to topple them.
Yeah, the big matchup, it was the difference I saw. They didn't have anybody for Cardozo. And Cardozo yes. really, really – and then just overall on the glass, I was really surprised at how bad South Carolina pounded them on the glass. I mean, it was yeah. like a 21-22, plus 21, plus 22 margin for South Carolina. So, Kathy, you talked about the Final Four. Appreciate you hit. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, the bench too, South Carolina, yeah. 37 to nothing. So, most kind of them by one of their freshmen. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of neat to see Molly Davis hobble onto the floor and be able to at least get a few seconds on the floor at the end of the game. That's right. Cause she had suffered an ACL injury and they never really said ACL, but that's what everybody who watched that game against Ohio State kind of knew what it was.
Yeah.
Just the way her knee buckled and the fact, but to see her get out there and get a few seconds in that championship game, kudos to Lisa yeah. Bluder for getting her out there. Real quick, Kathy, any final thoughts on the season here for Indiana?
No, I think you summed it up really nicely, Jeff. You know, hat tip again to our program, right? You know, we just had another stellar season. 26-6 is just a fantastic record. That's about where I think, you know, if we looked back at what we were expecting, that was in terms of the regular season before conference, that was actually one loss less than I was had expected in our preview of when we did our predictions. And so just really pleased with our women and how they came together again, the cohesiveness, the program that we're building. And I'm very excited to watch how things transpire for us here over the next month. You know, the spotlight being able to play South Carolina so tough, hopefully gave a lot of recruits, both transfers and high school recruits, visibility into what Coach Morin has been building in the last 10 years. And so I'm really excited for what the future brings. It's definitely a little more uncertain going into next year than maybe we've felt the last 2 or 3 years, but I'm excited to be along for the ride.
I am too. And I'll just say kind of ditto to your, it's all those things that we talked about, another great season by the IU women's program. And we continue to look forward to more solid seasons coming up here in the future. So we'll return on Wednesday, April 24th. That's in 2 weeks. So the showtime will be our usual time, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, right here. You can follow us along on YouTube and watch the show live and join with the Workaholics. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com YouTube.com/@BackHomeNetwork. That's the at sign, at symbol, YouTube.com/@BackHomeNetwork. You can be a part of our private community as well. Find out more at assemblycall.substack.com. Special thanks to John Ringer of Rig Design for designing our logos. Also, a big thank you to Bob Thompson for our music that you heard throughout the broadcast. I want to thank all of you for listening, whether you're watching us live on the YouTube feed or you're getting it from your favorite podcast feed. We want to thank you for listening to us and making the show be a joy to do for you guys. We'll be back to talk IU Hoops again with you in 2 weeks. Until then, keep your elbows in, your eyes on the rim, and let's go Hoosiers.
All right.
All right.
Our first non-season or off-season podcast in the books. So nice.
Yeah, a little longer than we were intending, but it flowed well.
It did. Not a shock. We always say that we're going to be like 30 minutes and then we should just know better at this point. Thanks for everyone.
No longer than an hour. If we said longer than an hour, we'd been under. So yeah. Anyway, hey, want to thank everybody. I'm going to get out of here because I know Kathy's got to get ready for work in the morning and everything. We want to appreciate everybody who is watching us on the YouTube and listens in on the podcast. Again, thanks for joining us. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Kathy, I will see you in 2 weeks. Obviously, we'll text if anything happens. And again, that's the other thing too. If something happens, if somebody, for example, in the portal, somebody, especially a big name, all of a sudden, you know, like we were talking a little bit in the Workaholics, Caitlin Chen at Princeton would be a one I would love to see in an IU uniform. But yeah, if it's somebody, you know, somebody
that, girl we're on the list for Vanderbilt. I think there's a Vanderbilt girl, right, that we're on the list for.
Villanova,
wrong V. Yes, thank you.
Villanova. I thought Vanderbilt too, and then it rung in my head Villanova. But yeah, so if we get something big like that, we might do a brief, a really short emergency cast podcast. But for the most part, we're going to be here about every 2 weeks.
Yep, sounds good. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.